Welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, June 23rd, episode 108. I'm Andy Lennox.
All right, close enough.
Yeah, these guys are.
I'm Rob, and that's Jason.
Hey.
That was not the worst intro that I've heard on this show.
No. I've done much worse.
Not even close to the worst intro.
Yeah, well done. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah. So,
if you're listening now, it's the exciting conclusion of part two
of
our trip to Origins.
That's right. We're on our drive home right now.
Oh, we are wiped out.
Yeah, my voice sounds even worse.
Yeah, so we did good. It was an awesome day. We accomplished most of our goals. I only played two of my games. I didn't get to play Zoopocalypse, but I was okay with that because the other play tests were very helpful. Very, very happy with that.
Yeah.
How about you guys?
I only played one of my games. I didn't play Cakestastrophe, but I got a play of Zushido Int, and the feedback was good. Maybe we should go over that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, sure.
So why don't you start, or somebody else start?
Well, I can start.
Yeah.
All right. Excuse me. We played first a game of Epic Monster Tea Party. The three of us and Chris Kopak, our good buddy, and it went well, right?
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Epic Monster Tea Party. I'm very happy with that game. But Andy, you had a brilliant freaking idea because we were playing and you just kept getting blue meeples.
Oh my god! For a little background, the blue meeple is the meeple that lets you drink everything in your cup and get
right.
points.
But it's worth 0 points on its own when you drink it.
So my cup was completely full of blue meeples.
Did you have five or six in there?
I think I had six.
Six, okay, yeah. And so that was basically a big cup of nothing.
Yep.
And then you had the suggestion that what if there was a set collection option, kind of a shoot the moon sort of thing, where if you can get, four or five or six blue meeples in your bag, get a big set, you can get some huge bonus score for that.
Yeah, and I think that would be cool for all the different colors.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
Because it sort of like plays with what you're trying to get for other people, like what colors you're going for.
Right.
Like if you, like everybody was using the yellow to draw another one, but if you actually had a yellow in your bag, it would be worth way more to like hold on to it.
Yeah.
So it kind of like morphs the game a little bit as you're playing. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, it's great. And you know what? It works thematically too, because in your, you're making a really good batch of this one specific kind of tea,
yes,
instead of it being a blended flavor of some kind, So it even works on that level too. So I definitely love that. I'm gonna have to update.
Don't mess with the pukey ones though, because those were perfect. I liked how if you had one, it was bad, but
two,
it was cute, but if you have two or more, it's like it's not any worse.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's what made me think of like, I like how this, there's a weird scoring thing with this one thing. What if there were weird scoring things with all the other ones?
So. Yeah, that feature came in pretty organically with Jason and our friend Laura and I testing that and just talking through a lot of the situation. So yeah, I'm really happy with that outcome too. So. I think that's fantastic. I'm thrilled. I'm going to definitely have to do an update to the edition on GameCrafter. Anybody who's already picked it up, I'll make sure that I get new rules out, and it's fantastic. So that's a must for further updates to Epic Tea Party. And actually, I have a question for you, Andy. I mentioned this to Jason. This idea occurred to me the other day. It is one alternative way to do this. Instead of having meeples that you're drawing, what if you had six-sided dice in different colors? And, like, the blue dice, they'd all be custom, right? It wouldn't just be 1 to 6. The blue dice, for example, would be numbered 0, 1, 2. You know? So 2 zeros, 2 ones, 2 twos. And, the next level up, the yellow ones, they might be 3, 4, 5s, or maybe 2, 3, 4s, or whatever, you know? And so, at the end of the game, to get your final score, you pull up the dice out of your bag and then you roll them to see what your actual score might be. As kind of one last sort of, I don't know what might happen. Maybe this tells me what kind of quality of tea that I just drank, what kind of quality leaves I had. I'm not sure if it's the best idea, but it was just an interesting thing that occurred to me. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it.
Oh, so it's exactly the same, except for at the end you're rolling your dice to see what the score is.
Exactly. You know, and, you know, so the blue meeples are all still going to be worth zero or almost zero.
Most of the time.
Most of the time, right. But, and the green ones are going to, you're only ever going to roll a 5 or a 6 on the greens, you know, or maybe a 4, 5, or 6 on the greens or something like that. But the orange, which are normally worth 5 points right now, maybe they'd be, 4 ones and a die and a 5 and a 6 or something like that, you know. So that could change some of the balance of that.
When you first started saying something about dice, I had this other idea that might be worth trying. I don't know.
Okay.
But where there's like 3 different types of dice.
Okay.
So instead of drawing from a bag of meeples, there's like the blue dice, the red dice, and the green dice, right?
Yeah.
And the blue dice has a higher chance to let you drink or do something else. And then the green dice has a higher chance of like two other different kinds of actions. And then you choose what die you want to roll. So you know, so you're kind of tilting the odds in your favor.
I see, okay.
I don't know why that popped in my head, but I don't know.
No, that's an interesting approach.
That's almost like, you wouldn't really need to change what the actions are.
Yeah.
But it almost seems like too big of a change. I think the game's pretty it's pretty solid, and I think just like one little tweak could really set it over the edge. And I think
the set collection is the best.
Yeah, it's such a good idea.
Because, it's just, it's not a huge component change at all. No component change.
No component, right.
It's just like a little tweak.
Yeah.
I like that game. I'm glad I got a chance to play it. Let me know when you update it, because I'm going to order my copy.
Yeah, I sure will. Yeah. So that went really, really well. Very happy with that. We also met Tiffany, who's, I know, a listener of the show, and she had me sign her copy of Epic Monster Tea Party. So thank you, Tiffany. That was the first game I've ever signed for someone, so that was fun.
And Tiffany was our second ever Valiant Builder.
Yes.
I'm still number one.
She was skeptical about the Valiant Builder scenario. And she's like, "You're going to give me a junky card. Why do I want a junky card?" And then I pulled the cards out, and she's telling me, she's like, "I want a junky card."
Yeah.
So these are amazing.
These cards are ridiculous. You want one.
Yeah.
They were an amazing find, all because we got lucky, basically,
right,
finding them.
And then I got 2 games in of Innkeepers. One I just played, me and Seth Jaffe, he played it and had a lot of really good comments. His feedback kind of focused on, with just playing the 2-player game, the main visual part of the game, and really kind of the fun part of the game, is building that structure on the table in front of you. But I want to make sure that when the players are playing, that they're also thinking about getting character cards to give point bonuses at the end. And he wasn't thinking about that. He was totally focused on building the structure. And he said that right now this is the most fun part of the game for me. And I didn't care.
I think everybody says that.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that's true. That is the best part of the game. But I don't necessarily want the guy who builds the biggest structure to always win, you know?
Yeah.
By adding in the characters, I wanted to add that strategy, you know? Yeah. I don't want it to be only about building structure. I want you to build the structure to get points by attracting city folk, right? Because thematically, you know, you as the person building this business, you're doing it to attract the high value customers. You're going to come and spend money at your establishment. So thematically, that's how I want to reinforce that. And so his biggest feedback was to make sure people are paying attention to that, to increase the value or the point value that you can get from those people. And that kind of led into what we got to is in later, Andy, you and I and Tiffany and Matt Loomis played a game. And that was kind of further fleshed out in our conversation about how I just basically need to get the whole economy under control and more cleared up.
Yep.
Yeah. And that was super valuable feedback. Now, you also had a fantastic idea about, I've got all these little cards that'll give you +3 or +5 or +7 gold or whatever. And you made the suggestion is, why don't you make it, +3 gold and you can do kind of a half action. You know, instead of it being get gold plus 1 action, it's get gold plus you can spend that gold to buy supplies if you want to. Yeah. Or, you know, one specific directed extra thing to do. Which is a great idea, I thought.
I think it'll speed the game up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then if you... Like I said, if you just play with that cost curve a little bit...
Yeah.
Then you're gonna... Cause what happened with me is I got my building going, and I got, like, all four sides of the building, like, completed, and I was gonna start building up. And I filled the whole thing with supplies, but I didn't get a chance to actually build my second level before the game was over, and I was like, oh, man, yeah. I'm gonna finish building this thing. Like, I was having such fun, like, planning what I was gonna buy next and building it up.
Yeah.
And, like, a lot of games that I play, like, they end a little bit too early, and it's, like, it's a good thing because I just want to play again.
Yeah.
And this one felt like it ended a little bit too early, but...
Too early.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's solid. I like that game, too. Like,
yeah.
I want to play more.
Yeah, I'm going to have a ton of updates to do, and I'm really excited about the changes. And that's something I've been struggling with it, is knowing what's the right time to end it. You know, when is it going on too long, or when did it stop too short? You know, so I want to make sure that's under control. But this is, frankly, this is the best feedback I've gotten on it in a long time, since our first play test, I think, with me and Jason.
Yeah.
So I'm really happy. And I think last week I said that I had a publisher meeting where I was going to show them Innkeepers, but it got canceled last minute. And I'm actually very thankful that got canceled, because now when I meet them at Gen Con to show it to them, it's going to be 10 times better than it was this time. So in hindsight, that was the best thing that could have happened for that game for me. So I'm really happy about that.
Cool.
Yeah, so anyway, somebody else now.
I brought Sushido out, played with Chris Kopak. It's a two-player game. I told you, I went over it a little bit in the last episode.
Yeah.
So I won't go into detail, but... I got the best worst feedback you can get, which is, wow, this is really good. I like it. It's fun. I don't know what I would do with it.
Yeah.
So it's like, is that? And it's like,
it's
when
tough
I play
feedback, you know.
Yeah, it's tough because, like, I know it needs like one more thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I know it needs some little piece of flair to really, like, set off the theme.
Yep.
And that's just not there. It sort of plays like an abstract at this point. Yeah. With cards.
It's to the point where you need to get it in front of, like, a super strong designer who can play it and be like... Or a developer who can play it and say, this is what it's missing. And you'll feel stupid when they tell you. Because you'll be like, well, duh.
Yeah.
How did I not notice that?
Yeah.
And, but, like, But this is the same feedback I got from... Matt and Ben,
yeah.
So, like, they gave me the same feedback about it.
Yeah.
And so I, like, you know, it's, which is reassuring, but it's still like a two-player head-to-head card game. Like, I don't know, it's still a tough sell.
Yeah.
I want to put it over the top so that it's a no-brainer. Like, I'll show it to somebody and they'll be like, oh yeah, that's happening. So
I'm bummed I didn't get to try it.
Yeah, I'm working on like a nicer prototype of it, and I'm actually like paying my buddy to do some art and trying to get Daryl to do like some preliminary layout for it.
Sure.
I don't know why I'm like going so far with all that stuff. I'm not really looking to self-publish this thing, but it sounds like it's going to be looking pretty good. So
and that could be partly what it needs.
Yeah,
maybe it feels abstract because it looks abstract.
I don't remember if I heard it on your guys' show or another show, but like I heard it somewhere where you need to make your prototype match the doneness of the game. Like, if the game feels at a certain level but your prototype doesn't, then there's a mismatch there and you might not really like feel it. So I kind of took that plunge to try and see, like, okay, I'm gonna get a little bit of nice art on this, make it look a little bit better, and see if it inspires me to do something.
Yeah.
And then also forced me to pin down a theme, because I didn't have a theme for like the longest time, and it was just like this totally abstract thing. And it was still supposed to be a fighting game, but like,
yeah,
I don't know. So I'm glad I got to play that. I'm glad I got to play all your guys' games. That was super fun. Like, it's so cool to hear about these games and how you're working on them for months and months and months, and then finally get to like see them in action. So I'm glad that that happened. So any builders out there?
Yeah,
we're all going to be at Gen Con, and I'm sure these dudes would be glad to play these games that you keep hearing about over and over again with you.
Yeah, Jason. Then so you played. Good game of Ramblers.
Ramblers was amazing. So I got some feedback from Andy and from Chris, actually. They both did some, quote, blind play testing for me. Not completely blind, because Andy especially knew about the game ahead of time, but it was blind enough to give me some good feedback with me not there and them playing with groups that don't know me. And Andy had suggested adding this bar thing in where you draft the Ramblers. Well, you didn't... Yeah, you said it needs some sort of draft at the beginning, and I like the idea that there are Ramblers standing at the bar and you can give them shots. And that dovetailed really well into some feedback that Chris's group gave, which was that people hated always having to give shots to the opponents. Even though it's a catch-up mechanic, it felt a little forced. And I totally understand that, and some other people had complained about that as well. So, we played it that way, and it turned out to just work really, really well. And it was fun, and it was thematic, and it was engaging.
So instead of assigning shots to other players, there are a certain number of Rambler cards that are just out on the table, kind of standing at the bar. And so you're basically buying a round for the other patrons in the bar.
And you can give them to the other Ramblers.
Oh, okay.
So it kind of the option is on you, depending on what you're trying to do. Like, if Andy's Rambler only needs one more shot to knock him out,
yeah,
I might give him the shot. Or if there's a Rambler that I see at the bar that I think Andy's going to want because it's going to hurt me,
yeah,
I might give all the shots to that Rambler to try and make them pass out to get rid of them. And, man, it works really well.
Yeah, there was a couple rounds where, like, there's some cards that say everybody gets a shot. And there was people who were playing those at the same time, and it ended up, like, all the Ramblers got drunk and had to be put on the bottom of the deck at the same time.
Even like ours and the ones at the bar, yeah.
That was so funny.
And when that happened, we laughed and we had fun.
It was a really good moment.
So the big takeaways from it were, one, the power level of the Ramblers needs to once again be ramped up. We kind of want to go with the idea that if it's all broken, none of it's broken. And then the other thing that came up that we want to add is the idea of bar powers, and that's special abilities the Ramblers have when they're at the bar. So, like, when this Rambler comes out at the bar, you must choose, like, he is the first one you have to choose, right? Or when this Rambler comes out at the bar, whatever Rambler has the lowest fighting score, he kicks out of their seat and takes their spot. Like, you're forced to play him.
Oh, okay. Wow.
One that buys everybody a shot.
Yeah, he buys one that makes everybody sober up. Like, maybe the rabbi would be great for that, because his ability is to stop you. He doesn't have to drink. So he walks in, everybody stops drinking. You know, so there's a lot of really fun stuff to do with that. And I just love that idea. Somebody comes out and they clear the bar. Like, when you put them out, everyone goes away. Or we talked about having one guy, you bring him out, his ability is, like, stinky, and no more Ramblers can be added to the bar until he's removed, because nobody else wants to be near him.
He's so smelly, yeah.
Yeah, which is really cool. I mean, that's you great. Could use that for a lot of strategy.
Yeah, totally.
So yeah, I'm really, really happy with this. There's so many little nuances to add to the game. We had the best feedback from another player that I really liked, which was, so when we had the game just being you bet one $100 every turn, 100, 100, 100 every turn, it felt flat. It didn't amp up. So I changed it to where the game is played in 9 rounds in 3 sets. So, like, the first 3 rounds, it was 100, 100, 100. Next 3 rounds, it was 200, 200, 200. And the last 3 rounds were all 300.
Yeah.
But that still just felt like the end meant so much more in the beginning. And then it was suggested to us by someone to make it, instead, you get dealt 3 cards, which is how it already works. The first hand is 100, the second hand is 200, and the third hand is 300. which means that you have to really strategize about how you're going to play those three. Isn't that amazing?
By round, it's by hand.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good idea.
And then if you get your cards, it resets again. One, two, three. So it's the exact same amounts, but it forces you to think so strategically about that. Oh, it's just genius.
That's great.
So anyways, that was great.
I think that's going to put that game over the top.
I feel like it is too. Yeah. The other game that I tested today was Inhale of Bullets, and that went all right. There are some really good tweaks we talked about immediately.
Yeah.
The game has a lot of characters in the game, and basically there are four of each type of character. That needs to be three of each type, and possibly I need to get rid of Head West.
Head West. Thanks, Siri.
That's literally what she said. Thank you, Siri.
Okay.
Let's get that in there.
Yep.
So that I think will help the game, but then it's still got some glaring issues that need to be fixed. So I feel good about the progress. I feel like every time we try it with a new group, it gets better. I do feel like it's got a long ways to go to really be something doable, like that somebody might actually be interested in.
Yeah.
So
I agree. Moving around the board, I liked gathering information. I liked that I liked messing with each other a little bit. And it wasn't
a little bit. You like messing with each other a lot.
And it wasn't ever anything like so. I don't know, the level at which you interact. Like when you put a bullet card in somebody's hand, it's not like you're totally hosing them. You're just kind of making their turn slightly more inconvenient, but it feels fun because you're shooting each other.
You're slowing them down. That's the idea. Yeah. You're slowing their progression through their deck.
And then we fixed the one thing where if you had four bullets, you couldn't
do anything.
You couldn't do anything. So that got fixed, and that was cool. But that's... There's a lot of things that I really liked about that game. And then there was some stuff that was like... One time I had a full hand of cards, no bullets, and like one of my cards said I could use any of my evidence cards abilities, so I had eight things I could do, and I had to like figure out the best, because you don't have to, but you can play all the cards in your hand, and I was trying to map a way through,
and maximize,
like, my brain exploded, so I got a little bit of AP there. It's not it's not likely to happen a lot, but man, I made everybody mad with that turn.
Yeah, it took you like 5 minutes to play that turn.
Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's a good game. I think you have some other stuff that's stronger. Like Transylvania, I still haven't played, but from what I know about it, I feel like that's a stronger design than Bullets is right now.
That's what I'm told, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know that I believe that, but then again, I feel like both games are terrible, so... but that's just me being Chevy Dodd there, so...
Yeah. I liked Transylvania before you, like, added stuff that fixed it.
Wait, does that mean you don't like it now?
No, I mean, I liked it before it was fixed.
Oh, and meaning now it should be even better.
Yes, exactly, so...
Fair enough, yeah.
And then you added vampires, so...
I got a little nervous. That game just came out called Transylvania.
What?
There's a new game that came out called Transylvania.
Yeah. I don't know anything about it, but yeah, I heard that. I don't know who published it or what the deal is, but yeah.
Well, it's probably not as good as yours.
Thanks.
It can't possibly be. I mean, I don't know. I haven't played either one, but... Yeah.
So, what else did we accomplish?
Go ahead.
Salvation Road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, that was a prototype that AJ... Furio from Van Rider Games had with him.
Yep.
That they're going to be putting out soon.
And AJ is a good friend of ours. We've talked to him and about him a lot. So
he was asking for feedback, and I was in the same awkward spot somebody else put me in. Like, I don't know, man. Pretty fun.
Yeah.
I
like this game a lot.
I don't know
what to tell you.
I had one piece of feedback for him, which was I felt like there should be a way to make a sacrifice to swap out a location for a new location.
Yeah.
Because that just sounded cool.
Yeah.
and there's 12 locations in the deck. You only get to use 6 of them.
Maybe like an overview. So this is like a Mad Max themed game. It's not technically Mad Max, but you know, you're If you've ever seen Road Warrior, it's pretty much in that situation.
Where...
Very much like Road Warrior.
Yeah.
You're this... These people in this town, and there's marauders at the gates, and you have to stock up. You have to, like, go find all these supplies to load in your big rig so you can drive to this town called Salvation. And when you get there, you don't have to deal with these horrible, menacing hordes anymore. And it's a co-op game.
Yeah.
And
what was interesting was it was a co-op game, but I don't know if it's because none of us knew...
Thank you, Siri.
I don't know if it's because none of us knew, like, how to play. I mean, I don't mean we didn't know how to play it, but because it was our first time playing it, there was never any issues about, like, no, do this, no, do that. It was, we just kind of did our own thing.
I think it could have happened, but I think part of it was, so each person gets two characters. You get a hero, and you get
a survivor.
And the survivor is just sort of a nice way of saying that they're totally, like...
Yeah, a drag.
A bumbling dragon.
A drain on your resources.
Your hero has a special ability that's good.
Yeah.
Sometimes awesome. Like, Rob's had a great special ability.
Yeah.
And the survivor has a negative trait.
Yeah. It's not always, like, super debilitating, but you have to work around it.
Yeah.
Right. And that was pretty cool, and I think it's because there's enough going on the board, and like, every co-op game I've ever played that solves that, like, co-op problem of somebody being the dominant gamer, it's because that it's in that sweet spot of there being enough complexity where you're having enough trouble, you're having enough of a hard time, not a hard time, but you're having enough work to do managing your own turn without managing other people's turns. Like,
right.
If you've ever played Sentinels of the Multiverse,
yeah,
like, you have a full hand of five cards and all this planning to do. You don't have time to, like, look at other people's hands.
Well, that's right? One nice thing about that is you don't know what everyone's hand is.
Yeah.
So you would have to say, can I see your hand so I can tell you how to play? And any, like, smart person would be like, no.
Yeah, and technically you could...
They allow
be a coach like that.
You could all play your hands face up if you really wanted to.
But technically you're just going to be like, do something about this guy, you know, in the spirit of a team game.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing was happening in this, where you have two characters and you have two actions on their turn, and there's, like, a bunch of actions on each of the locations, and so you are, you know, you've got a lot to think about, and without, you know, trying to think about what other people are trying to do, so.
Well, and the other nice thing, too, about the game was, like you said, when we were working together, it was like, hey, Rob, I'm going to go here. Can you move on your turn? Because we don't want to both be in this location. It's going to get bad.
Yeah.
Like, this is why. Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Let me get out of the way, you know? Yeah. So, like, okay, if you're going to go here, then I'll go here. Like, I mean, it was a lot of... I felt like we were strategizing, kind of like... But it was kind of like I felt like we'd be strategizing in the post-apocalyptic world. Like, we're kind of in a hurry, and you feel kind of like things are happening all around you, and you're kind of on your own, even though you're working together. So, the theme, you know, I mean, AJ... lives and dies on theme. I mean, that's a huge thing for him, you know, with his games. He just wants to soak it up, and this game is perfect for that. I mean, this game just drips with theme.
Yeah.
You know, and that's good, because that's, you know, I love that, you know. I know you guys are big fans of having very strong themes as well, and so, I mean, that it's totally the type of game that's right up my alley.
Yep. I had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. I was bummed we didn't get to finish it, because we didn't have enough time, and we were playing slowly.
Yeah.
Because it was our first time.
Right. Yeah, one thing we were talking about a little bit before we started recording, the one thing that we weren't sure about was the trading, being able to trade resources or share, you know. And we're not sure if that didn't come up just because, you know, we're newbies.
We kept forgetting.
Right, and we kept forgetting. Maybe in more elite play, higher difficulty, it would be more important, but it's hard to know.
He did say when we started, like, you can have one person be a runner. So, like, somebody who has, like, a good special movement ability, like, can end up being a runner and running supplies back to the compound.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty efficient way of moving stuff. So,
sure.
And that would require trading, you know?
Yeah.
And there could also be a character that has a super great ability, like, can move an extra space as a free action, you know? Like,
and maybe we just didn't get that character.
Yeah.
So,
that's another thing about a game like that, is getting the different characters changes the game dynamic every time.
Yeah.
And he said we were allowed to choose if we wanted to try and, like, specialize, and I would see that as a really fun thing, like, trying to build a super strong team
Yeah.
Like, okay, I have this weakness.
The difficulty up and see what right. you
yeah.
accomplish.
Like,
yeah.
this guy has this weakness, but we'll take that strength to counteract that, and yeah.
Yeah. So, what else did we play?
I played a game of Marvel Dice Masters with Chevy.
Oh, yeah, how'd that
go? We did a sealed draft with some boosters. I beat him. I skunked him. It was pretty bad. So I pulled really good stuff in my that worked really well with it. Because you basically, so in Marvel Dice Masters, you get 8 cards to be in your team and 20 dice. And you pick 4 ahead of time, then you open your packs, and you have to draft 4 more.
4 more, okay.
And to get up to your 20 dice. And I kind of hacked my team together because I needed 20 dice and I was kept falling short. And it ended up working out because when I was drafting, I got one pack and with 2 Hawkeyes in it. So that meant I had 2 dice, and he's like one of the best characters in the game. And Chevy did not have that, and he did not choose that for the ones he chose.
Yeah.
And I just rolled really well in the beginning and got some good guys out, and then it was just unstoppable. But the last time we played, Chevy schooled me, so...
Now, I still haven't played the game yet. I mean, I bought the set, and I bought a few boosters now. But you guys were also talking about, like, a Nick Fury card that allows you to get bonuses to Avengers. So, is it a good idea to build your team as Avengers or X-Men, or is it better to mix and match?
It depends. There's certain guys that, like, give you bonuses.
Yeah,
so like... You can build it around, like, putting all the X-Men together, or you can build it around putting the Avengers together, but you don't have to.
Okay.
And you can make perfectly valid teams the other way.
Like mine, the one deck I'm playing with now doesn't have that, but I really would like to try an Avengers deck. And then when you have an Avengers deck, what else you can add to that that's cool is, so War Machine gets a bunch of bonuses if Iron Man's in play. So like you want to, you know what I mean? That's kind of like a cool combo. Like, oh, I can put those out together, you know? And
and it's just like any of those other games where like, this person spins somebody down, and this person, if they're level 1, something bad happens to them. So
right.
Put them together, and
some of my favorite ones are like Hulk. Like when Hulk takes damage, Hulk automatically knocks out a character of your choice because he's Hulk. It's like when you hurt Hulk, he's like, whoa, he Hulk smashes smash. Something. Yeah. So, good job, Andy.
Sorry.
Good job.
Keep turning the radio on.
Plug that phone back into that sweet piano music I'm playing.
Yeah. Okay. Here's another question.
Yeah.
Because in one of the boosters that I bought, I got the Punisher.
Yep.
Neither X-Men nor Avengers.
A lot of people aren't on teams.
Yeah.
There's in the game, there's in this set, there's X-Men, Avengers, Fantastic Four, and villains.
Those are the only
teams. But some people aren't on any of the teams.
Yeah.
Like War Machine's not on any of the teams. He's not an Avenger.
Oh yeah, I guess he wouldn't be.
So.
Okay.
But like, I think the Avengers in this one are Iron Man, Hulk, Captain,
Black Widow,
Hawkeye. He's an Avenger, right? And Nick Fury. I think those are the main Avengers.
So far, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thor. Thor's an Avenger.
Yeah.
Fantastic Four's in there too.
Yeah.
But they don't have any like. Do they not have any like specific? I don't remember what their cards look like.
They have a symbol. They have a four.
They have a symbol, but I don't know if they have like.
No, currently they don't. But I think they. I think they will.
Oh, of course.
But if you field the entire team of Fantastic Four, does that mean you're gonna? You might be able to do well with that whole team.
You can't actually. Right now, there's. Is there a Sue Storm?
No.
No.
Oh, okay. So you can't even do the whole.
No,
thing.
Right now there's
Fantastic.
Just, there's
Johnny,
the thing
Johnny
and Johnny Blaze. Yeah.
Yeah. Johnny Storm.
Storm. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Johnny Blaze is Ghost Rider.
And then there's 2 additional, like, so there's, most of the cards are characters, but there's also actions, and there's basic actions. You get 2 of those basic actions when you play the game, but you also get, you can choose more if you want, and there's 2 actions right now that I know of, and that's Mjolnir. Dude, I'm trying, man. That's pretty close.
Try harder. It's not that hard.
Mjolnir. Anyways, there's Mjolnir, and then there's also the Vibranium Shield. Vibranium Shield is friggin' sweet. But like Mjolnir, it does damage, but it doesn't ever damage Thor because he's Thor.
Right.
So
okay.
It's very thematic and it's cool.
Right on.
I think the best thing they did for that game is the cards have a rarity level, common, uncommon, rare, and super rare. But the dice don't. So what ends up happening is, if I get three common Wolverines but one rare Wolverine, I'm happy because I have full Wolverine dice, and I needed those dice for the full Wolverine effect. So yeah,
Wolverine dice. Yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah,
so and just because it's rare does not necessarily mean it's automatic.
No, one of the best cards in the game is Hawkeye's common, and he has a rare version too, but it's common. And Cyclops has a really good one that's uncommon, and his rare is just okay. You know, a lot of the ones in the start, like one of the best ones is Beast, Mutation 666, is one of the better cards in the game. It comes in the starter set.
Cool.
You know, so, yeah, they really, Eric Lang had said they wanted to make sure it wasn't like buy your way into the game, you know?
Yeah.
So,
design wise, one of the things I really like appreciate about this game is there's a lot of like head to head collectible games, right?
Right. Yeah.
And it's like, you know, put your resources out, use your resources to buy dudes, use your dudes to attack each other. And this sort of falls into that category a little bit. But it just has this whole different flow, like, from other games. And I can't quite put my finger. I think it's because you don't have a deck.
The other thing
is, you don't have a deck. You're buying characters that you bring your team. And you buy the ones you want to put in there.
Right.
So it's like it's like you're building a deck as you're playing. So it's like a head-to-head.
And you can bring some, like,
game with dice.
And there are certain characters you'll bring and never even field. Like,
you might not need them.
Well, or you may, like, Mr. Fantastic, for instance. Chevy uses him for something, I don't remember what, but he has a global ability you can pay to use. You can pay to use that when he's not in the field.
Yeah.
So he brings one die for him, because that's the minimum you can bring, and he never would put him in the game, because there's no reason to, because his die isn't good. That global ability is awesome.
Mm. When building teams, there's a lot of room on your team for, like, utility characters.
Right. Which is cool. You know, there should be, because it's a superhero team, right? I mean, that makes sense.
You know, if you're going up against a certain type of deck, you know, you want to have this type of card available, this type of die available. So, it's...
That's good. Yeah.
It's cool.
I'm looking forward to playing.
Yeah. Oh, and the other, I made a sweet trade today. So Chevy and I both bought 10 packs. Well, Chevy went to pay me, and he's like, crap, I only have $7. and he has two play mats. And I was like, how much did you pay for the play mat? And he's like $2. And I was like, if you give me 5, I'll give you all 10 packs for 5 and that play mat. Because he had an extra one. And he was like, sure, sounds good. That was awesome. So now I have a little play mat. It's just like a big mouse pad, but it works really nice.
Yeah.
You can use the rule book for it, which is what I've been using, but this is a little nicer. And at Fanfare, they have a big play mat, but it's
$20. Oh, that's
crazy. And I was like, yeah, no. So I got mine for 5.
Cool.
So.
Rad.
So, hey, we've been talking for a long time here.
Have we?
Do we want to quick try and do a pitch?
How much time?
39 minutes in.
All right.
So let's do a lightning round pitch.
All right. Lightning round pitch.
Lightning round
pitch.
How's that
work?
I'm going to say... All right, here's what we're going to do.
All right.
We're each going to do 2 pitches.
What?
No. Okay. I'm going to... we're not. I'm not going to pitch... I don't know. Okay, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to give you the title of a game, Andy, and you're going to pitch the game. You have 30 seconds to pitch it. Okay, maybe we'll give you 60 seconds to pitch it.
You're still recording?
Yeah. the name of the game is Bombardier Beetles.
Use the pipeline to take the US-68 North Ramp.
What she said.
Siri just cut you off and did the pitch for you.
Bombardier Beetles. So, okay. You are... What is a bombardier beetle?
I don't know. It's a kind of beetle.
Bombardier. Is a bombardier a person who...
Drops bombs.
Drops bombs?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So...
So I have to take an exit coming up?
Maybe. She was just saying words. 1.6 miles. You want 75.
Oh, yeah. I know 75. Okay.
That's terrible. This is a terrible idea. I don't know what I'm doing.
Wait, so is Andy Lennox, is he going to give up here? Do I have to give this to Rob?
I think I got some.
Half mile, okay. Keep right at the fork, follow sign
I think I got something if you want me to take it.
Yeah, please do.
All right. So it's a dexterity game, right? So the game board is it's like set up like a map of like French countryside or something. Kind of like the Carcassonne, right? And it's got cities and it's got villages and churches and whatever on it. And each one has different point values, like pre-assigned to it, okay? And the players are the bombardiers who are dropping beetle bombs.
Paul, George, and Ringo.
Yeah, on the French countryside, okay? Let's not make it French countryside. Let's just make it generic countryside.
Generic European countryside?
Yeah.
That's the best.
Okay, that's my favorite. Euro countryside.
So it's a medieval airplane?
Yeah. No, it's very World War II. Okay. And what you're doing is you have to hold your you have tokens, and on the tokens are beetles printed. And there are five different types of beetles, okay? Everybody starts the game with the same number of beetles and of each type. And you have to hold the beetle a minimum of 24 inches above the board, and you have to drop the beetle. And then the beetle will land in somewhere near a target, hopefully. Different targets give you different points based on what type of beetle is most effective there. And whoever has the most points at the end of the game wins. There you go. Bombardier beetles.
Boom. All right.
It's like butter.
All right. Andy, would you like me to give you a different one?
Yes.
Okay. You know what? It's Rob's turn.
It's my turn.
Yeah, Rob.
All right. Is this for Andy or is this for Jason?
For Andy. No, Andy should get to give him after me since I was terrible to him.
All right. I gotta redeem myself. I wasn't ready for
you. You don't do this every week. It's okay.
Yeah. Okay. This game is called Applesauce on Ice.
Applesauce on Ice.
Yes.
Okay. This is a game. This is a game about terrible bartenders.
Okay.
So there is a bunch of recipe cards. No, not recipe cards. There are ingredients that are at a bar. Okay.
Okay.
So there's various alcoholic beverages, and you are all cocktail
mixologists.
You're all mixologists, but you're all like horrible wannabes.
Yeah.
So you are putting together these horrible drinks for people, and so you've got a bar full of customers, and whoever can make the most customers puke is the winner. So each customer has like certain things that they would love to drink, right?
Uh-huh.
And certain things that will definitely like make them puke. And you can't just, like, straight up give them something like that. You can't just give somebody something that will make them vomit. You have to, like, doctor it up a little bit. So there's, like, cards. Maybe not cards. Maybe there's some way of drafting ingredients from the center of the from the bar. So there's only so many ingredients per turn, and you have to, like, maybe there's some drafting of some kind. And you're trying to complete, like, some cocktails for the people at the bar.
Okay.
And if it has to have more ingredients that they like than ingredients that they don't like, but it also has to reach a threshold of ingredients that they don't like.
To make them puke?
So that they'll actually drink it and then puke.
Okay. And one of the recipes is applesauce on ice?
Yes.
Okay.
I think you got it.
So that's Applesauce on Ice.
Excellent.
Coming to Kickstarter soon.
Yes. Yep. All right, so I get to make one for Jason.
Yes, you do.
Make it painful.
Okay.
Do your worst. These are my favorite, so.
How about, for some reason, As Seen on TV keeps popping in my head.
As Seen on TV?
As Seen on TV.
Ooh, I like that. That's a good one.
That's a good one. I really like that.
But this is like, this isn't hard, because this actually sounds like it might be a cool game. But I want to hear what you come up with for As Seen on TV.
Okay, so as seen on TV, well, there's a couple different things I can think of. My first thoughts would be that you are a pitchman on TV, right? And you're trying to sell products that are on there. But that to me seems like too low hanging fruit. So let's make it a little more challenging. So I'm going to say instead, you are people that are trying to invent. Like, you've invented crazy things that you want to get on TV. So you're trying to get them. You're trying to get them in front of the pitch man, right? Okay. Or the pitch men and women. There's multiples. And the idea is you want to pair your wacky invention with the people who are most likely to do a good job selling it. Because, you know, if it's got anything to do with squeegees or whatever, that one dude who does that mop crap is going to sell them really well.
Sham wow.
But, I mean, if you're trying to sell something else that's going to make, you know, window cleaning easy, you know, you want the dude who's better at that. And if it's got orange in it, you want that dead guy. So, right? So, I mean, that's kind of the setup there that you're trying to do. So, what'll happen is, and you're not even the inventor, right? You're someone who's just, like, trolling for these inventors. You're the devious person that's signing the inventors and then trying to get their thing out so you can make a bunch of money off their invention.
Okay.
So,
Like agent.
Yeah. So we've got this line of cards, conveyor belt style, that's moving through the board, right? And each turn you've got five cards out, and these are five inventions that are, you know, that are out there that you want to try and snatch up. Now, to snatch those inventions up, you have to coerce the people into signing them. So what you've got in your hand are contracts, right? And the contracts meet certain stipulations. Different contracts mean different things. How much money you have, how much fame they're going to get them. Like, one inventor might not be super concerned about money, but he wants to make sure that every ShamWow that you buy says Rob Couch in the center of it, because he wants everyone to know that he created ShamWow, right? And I think instead of having just, like, a deck of those cards, I think you have, like, seven contract cards that you start with, right? And those seven contract cards, you're going to spend those as you go. Once you've spent it, it's gone, right? Until you've spent all of your contract cards, in which case you can then pick them all back up again, right? So you're going to be working your way down as you buy them, which is going to allow other people to strategize, because you all have the same seven contract cards, right? So once you get the inventor, now you've got these inventions, now you need to find a way to get them in front of the correct pitch man. So how could we do that? Well, I think that you've got these pitchmen, and they're out there, and, you know, and you're trying to push things to them. So maybe the contracts are actually, I like this. So the game could be played in phases, right? The first phase is you trying to spend all your contracts to get as many of these inventions as possible. The cards are actually two-sided. On the second side of your card is your offers to the pitchman. It's like a different kind of contract. And then you're playing the game in reverse, where you're now trying to entice the pitchman to take the right things. Based on the pitchman that takes it, you earn a set amount of money. That set amount of money determines how well you do. The player at the end of the game has the most money. And that's as seen on TV.
I don't know how you do it.
You know what's weird about it, too? Like, I was thinking as I was going, when I was like, how do you win the contracts? Well, here's how you win the contracts. I had no idea when I said that. I just started talking.
Well, here's how you...
And as I was talking, I was like, I don't like the idea of a deck. I like it better that there's, like, a limited amount of cards. And one of the games I always think of when I think of that is Damsels in Distress, actually, Rob. Because that is one of the most elegant systems for card play that I've ever seen in a game like that, where, like...
Okay, great.
You may not agree, but I think it's fantastic. So, like, you have, like, seven or eight cards in your deck.
Yeah.
And I spend three, I think, right? And those go off to the side, and then I draw the next three, and then I spend those, and then I draw one, and then I shuffle the cards and draw, right? Or no?
You have seven cards in your deck. You draw three, use those three, set them aside. You take the next three and use those. And then on your third turn, you take the one remaining card and then two of the first three that you played.
Right.
And they are always kept in the same order as they're played.
Yeah, and I think I really like that, because it makes you make really tough choices, and you're like, oh gosh, I need that one card, and it's two turns away, and oh, you know, so I like a system kind of like that. I think that's what it would, what I thought of as I was spewing those words forth. So,
all right.
Cool. So yeah. Hey. So we have three games. We have Bombardier Beatles. We have Applesauce on Ice, and we have As Seen on TV. That's a triple pitch for you, lightning round style.
Wow! Wow! So,
that was kind of fun. I like that.
That was fun.
That was cool.
I feel sweaty.
Well, lightning is hot, so you know. All right, so I think that we're good for now.
I'll wrap it up.
Yep, go ahead.
All right, well, hey, thanks everybody for listening to the show. We appreciate it. I hope that the audio quality has not been too terrible while we're driving here, and hopefully you can understand me through my croaking voice. Jason and Andy sound fine, but I sound like a, well, I guess, I'm terrible.
Bye.
So if you want to get in touch with us, and we encourage that, you can send us an email to buildingtheapodcast@gmail.com. You can also contact us on Twitter @podcastbtg. And Jason is @JASlingerland. And I am @poorly_design. And please like us on Facebook. And please give us a 5-star review on iTunes. Nope, not yet. It's not time yet. It's not time yet. All right?
Sorry.
Don't forget, also, you can get a copy of Water Balloon Washout by going to the website, buildinggamepodcast.com. You can also get the Rumpelbum Academy for Bug-Based Baking, and you can soon get the revised, or let's call it version 1.5 of Epic Monster Tea Party, coming soon, both of those on the Game Crafter. You can also watch Something From Nothing, our bi-weekly video podcast where me and Jason and Chevy and TC get together and have a Google Hangout live every Sunday night at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. If you can't watch it live, you can watch it later on YouTube, or you can get the audio on our podcast stream.
And don't forget the 20 Minutes of Filler podcast with me and Jason Katarski.
That's right.
It's a good show. You should listen to it.
It's a great show. Andy Lennox, Jason Katarski. How can people find you on Twitter, Andy?
I'm Andy_Lennox.
There you go. And that's it. That's all there was. Thanks for joining us for this Origins Adventure gang. And
yeah,
thank you guys. All right.
Good night.
There it goes.
'Building the Game' is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
We are recording.
All right, so this is episode 108, right?
Yep, and it's going to post on... Tomorrow is the 6th. Monday is the 16th plus 7, 23. Is that right? Should I check? I should probably check.
Sunday?
No, it's Monday. It posts on Monday. Well, it posts on Sunday, but it technically posts on
Monday. We always date it for Monday.
That way, we post it on Sunday in case there's ever a problem. Like, one time we posted it and it didn't post. So, on Monday, somebody said, hey, where's the show? And then we posted it and it wasn't late.
Yeah.
So.
Sneaky, right?
Yeah.
23rd, yep. I mean, that's honestly the main reason we do that. Because we don't ever want to be late.